You've heard the benefits of sobriety, amazing sleep, and less anxiety. But what happens if you quit drinking and now you can't sleep and you're super anxious? Enter Tenassi, my sleep saviors, and they have science to back up their sleep, anxiety, and pain-relieving powers. Back in 2016, they invested a $2.5 million grant to Middle Tennessee State University to study the hemp plant. Turns out their special patent-pending CBD-CBDA formula is twice as effective as CBD alone and can be more effective than over-the-counter ibuprofen, acetaminophen, and aspirin. So if you're tired of tossing and turning like a rotisserie chicken, then Tenassi's got your back with their range of great products from tinctures to gummies to lotions. Tenassi is my go-to when I can't sleep or I have way too much anxiety. I'm so glad that I discovered them. So go to Tenassi.com and use the code POWER to get 25% off your order. That's Tenassi.com, T-A-N-A-S-I, to get 25% off your first order with the promo code POWER. I talk a lot about doing the work on this podcast, so let's talk about what the work actually is. In this episode, I'll explain what the work is, roadblocks to doing the work, how you can get started, and detours to be aware of on the journey. You'll learn more about victim mentality, blaming others, and if we have to do the work forever. So let's dig in. About doing the work, but what is the work? How do you know if you're doing it or not? How do you know if you're doing it right? In my opinion, doing the work means taking an honest look at yourself, your patterns, your perception, and your role in your own problems. It means being willing to admit that you aren't perfect and admitting your flaws and where you need to make adjustments. With drinking, this means understanding why you drank so much. I think we can all agree that our drinking wasn't fun or enjoyable at the end, but we continued to do it. So therefore, if we continued to do it, there were other reasons for drinking besides fun, relaxation, or socializing. I told myself I just like to have fun and unwind, but my drinking stopped being fun years before I quit. And by the way, texting people while you're drinking alone on your couch does not count as socializing. In fact, if you prefer to drink alone because that's when you could drink the way you want to, then you're probably not drinking for fun or relaxation. Many of us drinkers live our lives on autopilot, so the reasons you drink may be below your level of detection. I know that mine were. I genuinely believed that I just liked the taste of wine and liked to have fun and relax. In reality, I drank because I couldn't handle any emotion and because I hated my life. Drinking was a two-hour escape from a life that I thought sucked. So the work for me was learning to manage emotions, learning to change my thinking, and creating a life that I enjoy on its own without having to take an edge off of anything or enhance something. The hardest part of the work for me was identifying my role in my own misery. I was very reactive. I had unrealistic expectations of others. I was easily offended and took everything personally. I was super passive, couldn't set boundaries, and I needed everyone to like me. I couldn't tolerate stress, frustration, having to slow down, or any minor inconvenience. I realized eventually that I was the common denominator in a lot of my problems, and these realizations are uncomfortable, which is why we don't acknowledge them. But awareness is the first step to change. And then the second step is to stop making excuses. We are really good at believing our own crap, and we can come up with 1,000 reasons to drink easily. Part of the work is taking action despite all of these reasons. Excuses could be you have a social event coming up and you can't quit until after that. You couldn't possibly quit during the summer because the warm weather. You couldn't possibly quit during the holiday season. You're bored and there's nothing else to do. You don't have any friends. Things are too hard right now. You work too many hours. These are all things that can be worked on, but drinking is letting your problems continue to exist. Ask yourself, do you want to be uncomfortable for a few months? Or do you want to continue to feel the way you do now for years or decades because you made excuses to not do the work and you bought into all your own crap? There are solutions to almost every roadblock, and once you start seeing things as obstacles instead of justification for you to just give up, then your life will improve. Boredom, loneliness, anxiety, anger, lack of non-drinking friends are all obstacles. Excuses keep us stuck in victim mentality. When we're a victim, we have no power over our own lives, and we can't do anything to improve our situation. If you're stuck in victim mentality, then you may blame other people for your problems and self-sabotage to keep yourself stuck as a victim and keep yourself stuck in a level of discomfort, anxiety, self-hatred, whatever negative feeling that you feel comfortable in. Some potential causes for being stuck in victim mentality are childhood trauma, life circumstances, and neglect. And this can also show up as all or nothing thinking, catastrophizing, not taking accountability, being defensive, and complaining about your problems instead of trying to solve them. I was a big complainer, and it drains the people around us that we care about. And complaining may feel good, but it doesn't get you anywhere. Sometimes venting can be productive, especially if you need to work through something and you do that better verbally. But constantly complaining about everything keeps you stuck in this mode where you believe your life sucks. And that keeps you stuck as a victim. So I also had to really become aware of how often I was complaining about things. A 2020 study published in Personality and Individual Differences found that there are four dimensions to being a perpetual victim: the need for recognition, moral elitism, lack of empathy, and rumination. And these are all things that feed anger too. And we talked about rumination a lot in episode 189. But moral elitism is the belief that our actions are justified because we have good intentions or good morals. It can develop as a defense mechanism against deeply painful emotions to help us maintain a positive self-image. It makes us think other people are being selfish. If you're stuck in victim mentality and this is resonating with you, then the first step is awareness of that. After that, then you can get more specific. You can work on recognizing when you get defensive, when you're making excuses, when you're complaining too much, and when you're blaming others. When you recognize those behaviors popping up, challenge yourself to take responsibility. Victim mentality keeps us feeling out of control and triggered. Taking responsibility brings our life back into our control, and that is so empowering and comforting. So how do you start doing the work? There are different methods, like going to AA, working with a therapist, joining a coaching program, joining a community, reading or listening to podcasts. But remember, that's not what the work actually is. All of those methods work. It just depends on you and your preferences. Some people prefer AA, other people prefer therapy, other people prefer online communities, other people do multiple things. Everything works. There isn't one superior method. I think that the work involves a lot of thinking. You can think things through on your own, but we can only get so far by ourselves. And also, it's a lot easier with the help of other people because we're too close to our own lives to make some connections. Plus, if you're in community with other people like you, then you learn from the wisdom of the group. And you learn their lessons too, not just your own lessons. I think that the work is all about recognizing a toxic thought or pattern that you have. taking it out of your head and looking at it, turning it around and looking at it from a different angle, showing it to someone else and having them look at it, and then putting it back in your head and repeating this process several times. There are some thoughts that I've been doing the work on for years, and each time you look at it, you get a little bit closer to that big epiphany moment. You shift a little bit every time you look at it. Sometimes other people can make these shifts happen faster for us. So maybe I've said something on the show that felt like an epiphany for you, or someone said something in a meeting that just really made it click. That is also part of doing the work. So here's an example that I've been working through for a while. I've always been chasing more achievement, more acknowledgement, and more prestige my whole adult life. I wanted to get a PhD, not because I cared about research so much, but more because I cared about what a PhD represented. And this is exactly why I don't have a PhD. And then I wanted to get promoted in biotech to a certain level because I felt like then I would be acknowledged as smart and a worthy contributor to whatever the company was. Then I wanted to get a certain number of podcast downloads, Instagram followers, and fame because I wanted people to acknowledge how hard I work and everything that I contribute. This has all made me push myself way too hard. It's led to resentments, low self-esteem, setting myself up for failure, and cycles of burnout because of working 24/7. So the first step here for me was recognizing why I actually wanted the PhD. I kept myself in victim mentality about it for a long time, but once I acknowledged my true motivations, I was free, and then I could reframe. It's taken me 10 years to do the work on this, and I'm now reaching a point that I like to call enoughness. I don't want the number of listeners that Dr. Huberman has, for example, because that comes with a ton of trolls and hate. I'm not willing to put in the work to get a PhD and make those sacrifices. I'm not willing to put in the work to climb the career ladder in biotech. I've been getting closer and closer to enoughness this year, and it feels really good and peaceful. What I have, what I contribute, the impact that I make, and the recognition that I get is enough. A big part of this work has been not relying on external validation and being able to feel good on my own. And this is another anger trigger too, feeling like you need acknowledgement from other people. And that was a huge contributor to my anger. Early on in my sobriety journey, I realized that I am the drama. And although that realization was uncomfortable and painful, it was freeing to acknowledge it because that means that the drama can end. I realized that I was at the center of all the drama in my life, and nearly all of it was because of how I reacted to things, how I perceived other people's intentions, and my very low self-esteem. So here's another example. I used to blame everybody else for my drinking because I couldn't handle thinking that I was weak. Couldn't handle it. I realized I'm not weak. I just didn't have any coping skills or tools. I had no emotional education. That doesn't make me weak. It just means I have to learn some skills. So then I learned coping skills and felt empowered. So now that we're a little more clear on what the work is, I want to discuss common distractions and setbacks that I see out there online. Inspiration can be like its own drug, where you get inspo from a creator, you don't make any changes at all, and then you come back for another hit of inspo. You should evaluate what you spend your time doing and if it's helping. Early on in my journey, I spent a lot of time getting inspired and dreaming big, and then I would continue to stay in exactly the same place. It wasn't about being inspired and having big dreams. That wasn't my problem. My problem was I had very toxic thinking and I was super reactive. A lot of these big inspo accounts or conferences are designed to get you hooked so that you keep coming back for another hit. They know exactly how to talk to get you super inspired, but then tell you nothing at the same time. I think that inspo can even set up a block that prevents us from making any change. If we get inspired, we start to dream about the future and get excitable. instead of living in the present and reflecting on our past experiences. For me, the catalyst for making change in my life was usually negative things, like being embarrassed at the way I behaved or feeling fed up with my own crap. I'm not saying that inspirational stuff is all bad, because I know that personal stories of recovery are really inspiring and help people make change. But my point here is to take an audit of what you spend your time looking at or listening to and make sure it's helping you and not holding you back. I spent years looking at inspo stuff for hours and hours and hours a day, and I really believe that it held me back. I saw no positive change in myself from it. And once I unfollowed all of that, I actually started to make progress. Another roadblock that's kind of similar to this one: some creators like to make their audience feel outraged. They might tell you about big alcohol and all this alcohol marketing, and they might share things like in their story or on their page, criticizing how many people are pushing alcohol as the solution. All this does is make people reactive and feel outraged and out of control. So it keeps you stuck in being reactive, but feeling like you're in community with all the other outrage people. But then because you're so reactive all the time and hyped up, you can't take a look at your own life and make any change. So this is one reason I never look at alcohol marketing. People send me reels or posts, and I purposefully don't look at it, because then it tells the algorithm that you want more of that. So now you're getting outraged from one thing, and you're commenting on it, and you're sharing it with a bunch of people, and all of that signals the algorithm that you would like to see more of that type of content. So keeping yourself stuck in outrage, it might feel like you have this mission and you want to help, but it's not actually doing anything for you. So that's just my advice. You don't have to take it. Just some things that I've observed from my own personal experience. So the next obvious question is, do we have to do the work forever? Because it can be exhausting when it feels like you're the only one doing all this work and other people are just chilling. The more work you do, the better you feel, because the work lets you be calm, secure in yourself, confident, and empowered. You gain confidence that you can handle things. In the beginning, you'll do a lot of work, but over time, it's going to slow down. And then you may have gaps where you don't do much work at all until something comes up and you identify another area for growth, like me and my path towards enoughness. I said it's been a 10-year journey, but it's been on and off. I've made some progress, then I took a break and enjoyed that progress, and then I recognized a new pattern, so I made some more progress, and so on. Something that helps me too is to look at people who refuse to do the work. Their lives are tiring and stressful, and I don't want that for myself. They blame other people. They might say that everybody else is projecting when really they're actually projecting. And that just seems exhausting. So if you look to others and see an example of what you don't want for yourself, that can be helpful in reaffirming your commitment to doing the work. So spend some time today looking inward and reflecting on your patterns and the things that you have control over in your life. And take one step today to make positive change. And I will talk to you in the next one.
Addiction impacts all of us. Addiction's consequences run through all of us. From ourselves to our loved ones and through our communities, addiction creates so much loss and grief. My name is Dwayne Osterlin, and I'm the host of the Addicted Mind podcast, a show featuring personal stories, expert guests, and vital information about addiction and addiction recovery. We'll talk with leading treatment providers to discuss the latest research and treatment options for this devastating disease and advocate for mental health awareness. We discuss topics like the importance of creating a community of support to helping loved ones, to some of the latest research on psychedelic medicines. The Addicted Mind podcast has been about creating hope, listening to stories of many amazing people that have overcome addiction and are thriving. If you or a loved one is struggling with addiction, subscribe to the Addicted Mind podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or check out theaddictedmind.com. New episodes every Monday. See you there.